Lex was looking vascular and confused.
If everyone gets to do what they want with their bodies, he gets to look like a hot dog. Welcome back to Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Garrick Taylor, she, they, am doing a rewatch of the Monday Night Wars and making it everybody's problem. This week, for the first time ever, the first tag team introduction debut in the history of the show, our esteemed victims.
Hi, my name is Julia, she, her. I'm part one of the infamous posting tag team duo. best of known on bluesky.com. Find me there. Give me all your money.
Yes, yes. And
I'm Hessa, also of Blue Sky, not of any other podcast you might be thinking of at the moment. Different Hessa.
Oh, there's a podcasting Hessa. I was
there aware. Is, and podcasting is her thing. I'm kind of swerving into her lane a little bit right now.
Oh.
I actually found out that one of my followers thought I was her for 8 months.
Holy shit, that's amazing.
Yeah, which was wild. He said something, he was like, yeah, trans girl podcaster jokes just hit different. And I was like, oh God, do I have podcaster energy? Yeah. He was like, are you not on that podcast with Matt Chrisman? I'm like, no, I live with my parents.
Right? I wish we all had Matt Chrisman money. Come
on. Yeah.
We all deserve it. Possibly more than Matt Chrisman. All right.
Already taking shots at a larger podcast.
Look, it's Minnesota Nice and it's a wrestling podcast, okay? So I gotta hit my pot shots in. I've honest to God, I've never heard a single episode of that show. So I mean, I don't even fucking know. I have no idea what a Matt Chrisman looks like. I have zero idea of his takes. It's literally just playing a heel. And on that note, what, if any, idea of wrestling do you two have? Or are you both, did I capture a couple of noobs in my wide net of Blue Sky?
My wrestling experience is intensely limited to the fact that when I was younger, I would watch some very limited amounts of MMA and the Ultimate Fighter and stuff like that, and occasionally you'd see wrestlers come through in MMA, and almost universally everyone hates the wrestlers
naturally
because the wrestlers always seem to suck.
Well, yeah, because they're fake. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then some of the show.
Sometimes you'd have a fighter go to WWE or something, and you'd hear that they'd do really well there, and then you'd get mad about it. But yeah, actual wrestling, I'd say my general knowledge before watching these episodes was limited to the scene in Spider-Man, where Spider-Man has to fight Macho Man.
Yes, naturally. And we get the 90s homophobic joke, which makes sense because that's a theme here. I'm not sure if we picked up on that. 90s wrestling loves it some queer bashing. And it honestly, it kind of made me gay and trans in a lot of ways. Well,
that's something I was thinking through a lot of this is this is deeply sensual.
Oh god, yeah. Wrestling is gay, as Effie would say. Current wrestler, indie
and
guy.
Like yaoi gay.
Like very, 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 very gay. Yeah. And well, I mean, we're sure we can get into that, but there wasn't even any gold dust on this episode. My gosh. So I'd say we get a good rundown from Julia. What about you, Hessa? Any history of this or completely fresh?
Almost none. Growing up, there was briefly an across the street neighbor who occasionally did backyard wrestling, was rough. That did not go on long. Somebody broke their spine. And then,
God. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. At some point in the latter 90s, I think it was Raw sent a VHS tape to our house. And I remember watching that and never rewinding the tape. Just being like, no, I don't think so, guys. I'm sorry.
No, you try. It's a swing and a miss. You can't get every consumer. No,
tab was popped out. I couldn't even record over it.
Completely useless. Yeah, yeah.
So that's it. That's it. Cultural context, but no watching.
No watching. But yeah, there is some a few years into where we're watching now, there's more cultural context because it gets huge again. Especially now, like this is one of the worst years in the history of the sport that you're watching right now.
It was sports entertainment. Fascinating.
Yes. Well, we can get into it then. Do we want to start with Nitro or Raw?
I'm so excited for the Nitro one. Nitro one had so much going on.
Yeah, I want to talk about Nitro. It was so good.
Yeah, you like, all right, let's start with Nitro then. Horseman Country. For the lore involved, the Four Horsemen, this is their home turf. It's Ric Flair's theoretical hometown, actual hometown, even though he sounds like he's from Minnesota. Because he spent a lot of time here, and I guess the accent just stuck. but like his kid who's on her way to breaking his record of most times holding a title is literally named Charlotte, after Charlotte, North Carolina. So like Charlotte Flair, like we are full on in Ric Flair country. So like that might give you some context you didn't have for just how hard they cheered for that guy throughout this whole episode. It's Horseman Country. But
he had some of the best energy.
Oh, I think
of any of them. Like, it's something that stood out. Like, he was just such, I mean, we'll get to it, but like, what a showman. Yeah.
Oh, and that a lot of that's just 90s. That's 90s flair. A lot of that is just, it's a mixture of being in Charlotte and what I'm sure was just piles of cocaine. But more importantly, Leather Pepe, little dog in a leather costume.
Oh my God.
I'm so happy.
My notes in all caps say tiny dog.
A tiny dog note. It's all yes. over.
And can we address the line? Put your leather on. You're going to see some mean and nasty boys tonight. I was like, oh, okay. Let's go. Show me the boys.
Where are the boys? We got the. I mean, I'm told this is where the big boys play. What kind of play are we talking?
Bring out the boys.
Bring the boys out. No, and on that, you instantly hit something I've noticed, Hessa, where Nitro does like the Tobias Funke style gay shit, where like they say stuff and it's like phrasing, and it's been happening more and more. But then you get over to Raw, and it's just homoerotic.
Oh.
Like, and this has been a theme the last couple weeks, and it gets worse. I've seen the future, patrons, because we did some of the pay-per-view watch-alongs the last couple nights, and it gets even gayer. But, like, I'm so happy you noticed that, because it's going to keep happening.
I would like to, similar to how they began the episode of Nitro, begin this episode by doing what they do for the entirety of the episode. I'd like to disparage the Japanese. I'd like us all to say a lot of really bad things about the Japanese. Because that's what I noticed instantly, is that every commentator for the entirety of the runtime, at just an hour straight, there will be an active match going on where someone is actively punching another human being in the face. And one of the announcers will just jump in and be like, they don't see wrestling like that in Japan. Those prissy Japanese boys over there, they're going to see it real hurt. They're going to see the hurt come down later on.
I have so many things to say about that.
I picked up the context that there's some kind of big match between the Japanese and maybe Hulk Hogan, or no, it's Randy Sapp.
Actually, not Hulk in this. Everybody else, they're doing the World Cup, because there's New Japan is a Japanese wrestling promotion, and WCW is doing like a crossover. It's like when Superman, Batman do a crossover.
Famously never interacting, Superman and Batman.
So that's the context within the story. Right? No, but that's the kayfabe context. That's the story context is that Bobby Heenan, the world's greatest hater, one of the commentators, made a deal with Sonny Ono and got all these Japanese guys coming in. And they're working towards a pay-per-view in a couple weeks where it's going to be a bunch of their guys versus our guys to see who's best, basically, coming soon to the Patreon. We just watched it last night. It was a banger and a half. I literally forgot how good it is. But that's the kayfabe context. The 90s context is that everyone's freaked out over the fact that Japanese can make people can make cars. And like it was a thing. It was a big old racist thing in the 90s.
I was gonna say that's like right around when Nathan's brought over Kobayashi for the dog contest.
And you know they leaned into that. And that's part of how Kobayashi became a thing too, because I love Jamie Loftus and I know this. not as much as wrestling, but in similar veins. I just read too much shit. But yes, like absolutely, that was it was a thing in the 90s where also like God, Austin Powers did a bunch of it in the November movie. I know we leaned into it.
Those did not
age
well. Hold up.
Holy shit, no. But like it was just a thing, and so they're really, really leaning to that. Also, cultural context, there's a long history of this in wrestling. I'm sure Bobby at some point uses a word that we don't use anymore, because that's just what you call Japanese wrestlers in wrestling for decades. And it's like now it's just not, but everyone was from the Orient, everyone was Asian. Even though you had like most of them Japanese, some of them Korean, like everyone just got that blank slate and it's terrible. But wrestling, especially even more so further back in the history of this, played into the nationalism stuff. You had a lot of Russian wrestlers. You had a lot of, you know, your Ivan Koloffs and stuff like that and to play into the Cold War. And like, that was just kind of a thing they did because you're trying to create caricatures that will easily get across to an audience in every town. So a part of that is being racist. It's like the part of the business.
But that also kind of explains some of the characters.
Oh yeah.
That I didn't get. I was like, what? Why does this exist? And it's like, okay, if this is for like a guy in Missouri to look and say, all right, screw that guy, then like, okay, that adds a lot. That makes more sense.
Right. Well, I have a feeling I know where we're going with that. So to get into the action, now that we've all said our piece about Pepe, which is important, it's become an important part of the show. They go right into the action, which I thought was cool. Eddie Guerrero and Jerry Lynn, Mr. JL, these are two, like, y'all are getting to see baby Eddie. Eddie is like one of the greatest to do it.
I loved his performance. I have written here Eddie Guerrero doing John Wick shit.
Oh yeah, that's lucha. This is lucha libre. These two guys know their lucha, even though Jerry Lynn is a like the whitest white guy. At some point, Mongo says he wants to see JL maskless, and like I hate to break it to him, it's just kind of like if Kenny G was ripped and had a goatee. Like that's what he looks under the purple. But
am I correct in my assessment? As I did, the announcers gave so little attention to this opening fight, to be honest, and they were still like going in and talking about the upcoming fights and, you know, constantly talking about Macho Man and everyone else during it. Am I correct in assessing that this is the equivalent of like the opening act at a concert where everyone is still kind of shuffling to their seats?
Kinda, which is wild that they gave us Eddie and JL, because like these two, they rip. That shows us 1995. The kind of style that they're doing, like lucha style like that in America, would be called like cruiserweight style. Like they're not the big muscle heads. They can do the flippy shit. You know, like at one point Eddie does a springboard moonsault, and they do like the tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, and like that's all lucha stuff because you're smaller. You can do that. You can move your partner around faster in a safe way because they're not 400 pounds.
Is one of those so, when he dropped him on the crotch, on the knee?
Yeah, the atomic drop.
Because that looked really brutal. Like, yeah. That was one of those ones where I was like, he might have hit him there. I don't know.
Yeah. New bottom surgery dropped. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And,
take a page out of the announcer's book. Oh, that's a neck problem. Oh, he's got neck problems there. That's permanent neck problems, which we'll get to later on.
Yeah, exactly. Woof. Yes. But it's cool that you notice that because, like, yes, this absolutely should be like the shuffling in match because they didn't know quite yet what to do with these guys because we're in a transformative era where, like, it's changing. You don't see this kind of, you just now, because of Nitro, really starting to see this kind of wrestling on national TV instead of in like ECW and other places that were not as big of a TV audience. So like, it's actually a big deal. Like the fact that we're seeing Eddie Guerrero and Jerry Lynn on national TV, even in this, curtain jerker match is mind blowing in the historical context.
Okay. Interesting. Cause it did stand out like from everything else that we saw, like this being the first match was really interesting because it really grabbed my attention and then like nothing kind of hit the same.
Yeah. And that's honestly same. Because Nitro has been on a run of just kicking Raw's ass in our show. And this was the first one where I was like, I have to think about it. Cause outside of that opening match, I agree with you. It's whatever. It was a great match. It's a match of the week contender right off the bat, basically in my notes. And then it's over and we move on. And it's like, okay, Lex is here to make his boobs dance and Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, woo. And we get into exposition time.
Yeah, Lex was looking vascular and confused.
That's Lex. That's Lex Luger, yeah. he's baby like that. He's making his case for cis HRT.
Oh, hell yes.
Look, if everyone gets to do what they want with their bodies, he gets to look like a hot dog.
He's roided Max Headroom.
Abso-fucking-lutely, but more himbo-y even. Like, even more so. He's Lex Luger. He was supposed to be the next Hulk Hogan and never happened. And he just gets stuck there for the rest of his life. So, that's fine. And you get to be good money being like not quite Hulk Hogan. So
never eclipsing Hulk Hogan sounds like a form of purgatory.
Oh, that a whole lot of people are living. And it's kind of fucked up.
I am trapped. Yeah. Oh, I am trapped in the wrestling Bruce equivalent of Elo Hell. I'm in bronze forever.
Yes. it's certainly not going well for a lot of those guys. Speaking of being in Shadow Forever, though, we get threatened with Paul Orndorff before commercial. and then the Starrcade ad, which is leaning into the Japanese racism again. And it makes sense. They're trying to sell you this pay-per-view, but like, holy fuck, does it just get laid on so goddamn thick. It's gonna,
yeah, they
it's
could have done less happening. Like Yamaha DX7 Koto
I
patch.
Have a quote in my notes, which is just in all caps, from the mysteries of the Orient. And that's the entire vibe of every single ad. just these
every edits. Single fucking one.
Yeah, it's basically look at these guys. They're Asian.
It does isn't track, it weird though with like God. The as we touched on earlier, like the very profound American fear in the 90s that actually was very pervasive. It expanded past wrestling even into like Ultimate Fighter and mixed martial arts, where Americans were starting to get really terrified in the 90s of the fact that like you could turn on the TV and you could see a like 260-pound Irish boy from America just get his lights turned out by a 130-pound Japanese man who touches him with his finger and his heart stops. Like, it's Americans are starting to get afraid of mixed martial arts, and they're like, we need to figure out A, how to make money off of this, and B, also, what's the deal with the Japanese? Why do they have all these secret techniques that can destroy us with their finger?
My God. It's almost like they had culture based off of like a thousand year things other than just a bunch of nomadic people in the coldest places on earth for hundreds and hundreds of years fighting over kings. I mean, you know, a little bit of both. They're fighting over emperor is my understanding. So, you know, potato, potato. But yeah, no, it's just all of that is just racism. When it comes down to it, it's Orientalism. It's that literally that. It's thinking that someone can actually do that, and even if they can, that like it becomes this white American version of both, and anyone who's Japanese and a fighter knows how to stop your heart with your finger. And then it also doesn't help that Steven Seagal exists. Like, he really made it worse.
Yes. Steven Seagal talk time.
Which is
I am a shadow wolf. And I know for a fact Hesse is also a shadow wolf. And we are both walking the way of the shadow wolves as Steven Seagal tries to teach us. Aikido. We're both trained in the martial arts.
Walking the way of the shadow wolf, asterisk, yeah, posting that's it. Too much.
That's what it
yeah.
is.
That's it. That's all it is. I mean, why do you think Steven Seagal made so many movies?
What do you mean
just
made?
Posting too
He's
much.
Making movies still, and they're all good. Sniper, no, Special Ops.
No.
The fact that he's still allowed around people is crazy.
Yeah, he was going to say, podcasts better than I have done plenty of time on Steven Seagal and why he shouldn't be allowed in polite society. Woof. Speaking of people who shouldn't be allowed in polite society, Disco Fever. We have had several weeks of respite from this asshat. And
I hate Disco Fever.
I do not
appreciate Disco Fever. I hated this guy immediately.
As you should. He is, like you said, he is the guy who it's like, oh, exist for me to hate you. And everyone can understand, fuck this guy. Except this crowd's like into it and encouraging him. And
I understand why, because they pitted him against the faggiest straight man that has ever been on stage. Yeah.
Who I loved because he was so camp.
Oh, you're so camp. No, he understood the assignment, Mr. Orndorff. He's also like one of the baddest motherfuckers in the room, actually. But yes, absolutely. And it's like, you have to hate this guy. He does hygiene. So like, he's like, what? How girly of him. Well said. But then so does Disco. So this is definitely like what do you do here? This is the two heels, like you mentioned before. In a way, like, who do you root for?
I know personally, who I'm rooting for. Over. I'm rooting for the gayest straight man I've ever seen in my life. The person who...
Yeah, I want to see Mr. Wonderful take disco pants off of
There's
that other
a lot
guy.
Of stripping at the beginning of this one, yeah. There was a lot of, like, tearing of jackets and pants and, like, clothing.
He got caught. Yeah, he got caught in the sequence, and that's... Yeah, again, God, this is gay. Oh, I love it.
As soon as they started, I was just thinking of the Barbara Kruger piece that just this is you construct intricate rituals which allow you to touch the skin of other men.
Yeah, no, pretty much. which is great because Disco in real life is an absolute queer piece of shit. And yeah, it's like, well, what? Like, you look at what you did with your life and I'm the faggot? Okay, sure. I mean, I am, but really? But yeah, he gets heel heat. Does is the good guy here, I guess, and I'm just sad. But I will say that like Paul does, he's a consummate professional because he's like selling like crazy for Disco. And like it kind of no wonder that Disco ends up growing up to think that he was good.
No,
because Orndorff is doing such a good job selling for him that I guess like if I went back and saw that, I guess I would be good too. Like he's doing his job. He's making this is just like a clinic on like how you know, to sell and not sell, because he Disco sells for shit. When he does sell, he oversells in an awful way that's comedic and doesn't feel real. When the guy who's super campy is selling like he's actually, and like that's a good wrestler. He is to find that line. Disco has no line. Like he just is. He's all camp to a bad extent, and I hate him, and he is all right. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, I Mr. Wonderful wins. Neither of these guys left an impression, and that match was way less fun.
My takeaway from this fight specifically was that I now believe that I have the chops to be a wrestling announcer.
A direct quote
from this match was, and then I would hit him with a right, and then the left, and then a right, and then the left, and then a right. And that is a permutation of strikes you can do. There aren't a lot of different permutations of strikes you can do if you are, you know, you have two arms. I guess so. Yeah, you can do that. And I guess for some wrestlers, you would do that. But I just don't think it's that insightful. It might be one of the funniest announcer things that I've heard ever since the MMA announcer said that both fighters in the ring don't have custody of their children.
Jesus Christ.
That was, holy shit. That's one of... I think that's John Anik, who just will
John inside just, thought. John.
He goes on.
Oh no, like, that's a good outside thought.
No, he goes, and it's not a passing comment either. In that, that's another. It's 2 full minutes of him being like, and this fighter over here, he doesn't have custody of his 7-year-old son. He doesn't know where his child is. The other fighter, his 10-month-old daughter. Is currently in a custody dispute, and they're fighting each other.
Oh my!
That's so like a hyper real. Watching two guys beat the shit out of each other while the announcers describe the kids that they don't have.
It's my favorite. But moving on to the next fight, I have an immediate question. Where's the four? Taking the reins here. I'm taking it away. This is the difficulty with a tag team, is you are focused on Hesse. I just came up behind you and I took the mic. The next fight.
This is classic.
Where's the fourth horseman? Yeah.
The fourth? Where is it? Right? No, it's an issue here. There's only three of the fourth horseman,
who I'm pretty sure from what I looked up and what I heard in the ring, is the fourth horseman Chris Benoit?
The fourth horseman at this point in time, this current iteration, is the second biggest monster in the history of wrestling.
I heard his name get dropped at some point, and my jaw dropped, and I was searching for him because I was afraid.
He didn't actually show up in this episode. Very confusing. But this podcast has been and is going to be spending time begrudgingly going, fuck, he's good at that, because like he's around a lot. This is where he really started to hit big, basically, and we actually are coming up on the beginning of the story arc where he meets his wife.
There's a story arc for that. There's a story arc of a family annihilator in
kinda. All right, well, I guess now is as good a time as any to kind of lean into it, because I know, again, from your patrons, it's coming up. The guy who is the what we call the booker, who is like the head writer, is a guy by the name of Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster. He is the Dungeon of Doom, or as I call them, the Dungeon of Goon.
Nice.
Right. Well, they're a bunch of gooners. He is currently married to a woman named of Nancy Sullivan, who literally goes by the name Woman. Like, when she is on screen, she's just Woman.
Oh,
she's so good. She's so fucking good and, like, so hot that it makes me physically ill. But that's neither here nor there. He is currently about to start the arc where Kevin Sullivan writes... the folks, the like wrestlers and shit would call, he works himself into a shoot. he wrote a story where Chris Benoit his wife cheats on him with Chris Benoit and like breaks up their marriage. And then it actually happens in real life. It started as a storyline and then happens, and she becomes Nancy Benoit and eventually one of the saddest aspects of the history of
this. This is a nightmare. This is a nightmare to learn.
Yeah.
You can never take up the lathe of heaven.
No, exactly. Never do that, Kevin. Yeah. I never take up the lathe of heaven. You know, somebody should have told him that. It's too late now. He recently died. But yeah, so I picked a hell of a subject for a podcast because I just get to every week talk about that. So that's where the Fourth Horseman is, not on TV and not anywhere that he doesn't absolutely have to be, because they like for a while there, they literally like scrubbed him from the record, but you can't do that at a certain point because he's one of the greatest wrestlers to ever live. So like you can't, you'd be getting rid of like whole events, you know, like that you just have to pretend don't exist, and like that's not how this works, you know. It's unfortunate,
but it has to be reconciled. It would be too big of a hole in history.
Yeah, basically. So like the best you can do is go, look, this dude was a monster. The fact that we didn't do a good job of dealing with head injuries and head industry, or he did what he did, could maybe have something to blame. I would go so far as to say the fans are a bit to blame, because I remember wanting more chair shots when I was 8. I thought the chairs were fake. I was like, well, they must be gimmick. Well,
so that was a question I had, was like, is there, how much padding is on the ground outside of the ring because of that like neck buster on the hard floor before this match?
To get in there. Yeah. Paul Orndorff comes in to try to save him. Because Paul Orndorff used to be a horseman, and he knows that Ric Flair is shit, which is...
Oh, he used to be a horseman. I thought he said that he could have been a horseman.
Oh, well, he could have been a horseman. I don't know. Did Paul Orndorff used to be a horseman? No, I'm thinking of Paul Roma. Nope, never mind.
I got you.
I'm not a professional.
I think...
You got me. No, Paul Roma was a horseman, and no one liked that. So I got
this
confused.
Is my podcast now. But
yeah, no, you're do you want it?
I had a traumatic neck injury.
yeah, much like Paul Orndorff, because for his trouble, he gets a spike pile driver on the concrete, which I'm sure is also how Tom Cruise audits folks in Scientology.
Oh, boom, take him down,
yeah. Yeah, woo. See, Matt, I'm not stopping at Chrisman. I'm coming for all y'all. Tom Cruise, please don't sue me.
We're taking punches in every direction.
Yes. Oh no. Even I don't think I could punch any far left than I already am. But all right. I could try. A tanky maybe. But we get it just gets so sad. We come back from commercial and he's getting put on his stretcher to Sting's music.
He's
for
dead.
Some reason
he's gone. I was like they actually sold this pretty well, to the point that I did look up. I was like, did he actually get injured? And then I looked it up, and correct me if this is wrong, but I learned he got injured. He injured his wrist or arm in a former match, and this injury in quotation marks was actually him. He needed basically an excuse to get out of the wrestling game, so they were like, this is going to be the retirement.
I believe that
for you
basically that like he's on his way out, and he was pretty much done pretty quick here, so I think that absolutely that tracks. So wow, look at you doing all kinds of journalism that I refuse.
There we go. Yeah.
Good for you. This is your podcast now. To answer Hess's question.
For a tag team, Julia's kicking mine.
Much like the next match that we're doing, you're standing in the back waiting to be tagged in, and I refuse to tag you in because I don't trust you. Yes. Much like Hulk Hogan doesn't trust Sting.
Why would you? No. Well, Hulk Hogan doesn't trust anybody. He's like the most paranoid motherfucker in the world.
Well, as we've learned many times, Hulk Hogan is not to be trusted by anyone
which
either.
Which is why he doesn't trust anyone, because he knows what he would do, which is fuck you for all your worth.
Fuck you over directly, immediately.
Well, we do it from behind, brother. That's what he would do. To answer your question, though, Hessa, as far as like the padding, he got put on the concrete. There was no padding there. Around the ring, though, like that blue mat, that's just like, if you remember, like in school when you would have like put mats out in the gymnasium to like tumble on, that's it.
Oh my god, because the first match they also did a little bit of floor work, and I was like, how much of this? What's going on here? Because that looked rough.
Like when they fly out and land and shit on the outside, like they're just hitting. That's just them taking the bump.
So they're doing Jackass. Like,
oh no, this is it's a mixture of like acrobatics, stage fighting, and Jackassery. We are getting hard into the era of Jackassery. Patrons, you can do the watch along episodes for ECW that I did a while ago to see just how hardcore it gets. But we're getting into the era of like flaming tables and death matches and all that good shit, which is, you know, backyard wrestling. It's just Jackass in a lot of ways. But there's,
which also ends with a broken spine.
Yeah, more often than not. Yeah. Or sometimes it gets you a career. I knew a kid growing up who ended up getting a job in the WWF. And I mostly knew him from being on the local backyard wrestling on PBS. Shout out Hornswoggle.
That makes a lot of sense that you're starting to see shit get even more insane in all sports pretty much during this time in the 90s and then into the early and mid 2000s. Because this is what I think a lot of people in American sports would call the roid renaissance, where the proliferation of performance enhancing drugs and painkillers especially was rampant in basically every sport. And you know,
and very much so here, very very much so here.
And it's important, and if you're thrown on the concrete, you gotta have something in your system to make that not kill you.
And that's why, a lot of them got in trouble with steroids too, because steroids, it wasn't always just to get bigger. It was because it would help you heal from, you know, all the shit you do to your fucking body. And like, that's the thing with this business. It's like, you really gotta love it, because like you're destroying yourself. And a lot of these guys got hooked on drugs and died early. Because of like, they were taking all this shit to be able to get to work and to go to the next town, and there's no health insurance. They're all independent contractors. Vince McMahon is Vince is a piece of shit, but he's no more of a piece of shit in that aspect than the entire history of wrestling. It's started as carny shit, like it literally carnivals and promoters. And
what
shit.
Is the so, like, what is the it, lifespan of a If you had to guess, because I know it's very sport to sport, but like how long does a wrestler typically have in their time in the sun, you know, before they literally just can't wrestle anymore? Is it like 5 years, 10?
I mean, if you're asking for an average, it depends a lot on the era, and also like, I mean, shit, it's hard to say because there's so many factors, because you have like, well, I mean, like look at Ric Flair. Ric Flair is like 124 years old and just like 2 years.
He looked old as shit.
Here, yeah, and he wrestled like 2 years ago. He died.
No way.
Oh
my God, what?
No, he like died and came back. Like he passed out several times. He wrestled his.
Oh, Jesus.
He wrestled his final match on, and it was its own special pay-per-view. No, everybody was just like, this is wrong. It was horrifying to watch. It should not have happened, but he's like that. He refuses to retire. And everyone hates him and wishes he would die because he's a terrible person. but like, so like, you have that, you have those cockroach motherfuckers, or you have his fellow horseman, Brian Pillman, who died in Minnesota in a hotel room in Bloomington of heart failure because of all the drugs and shit in his system that he was pumping in like 97. So like a couple years from watching him now, like he doesn't make it long into this. He's not going to make it long into this show, unfortunately. I was watching the night they found announced that he died on a pay-per-view. I was like watching it live when I was a kid. It really sucked. I love Brian Pillman. So we're getting into the era where a lot of these guys that we're seeing are going to drop dead pretty soon after they stop being on TV in the early 2000s.
It's crazy. That's a crazy thing to say. But right.
This is, we're coming into like the hardest era for this. I'd say back in the day, like we see and at Raw at some point, we see Freddie Blassie, who he was wrestling back in like the like 40s, 50s, 60s shit. And he's, you know, he's not still wrestling, but he's around. He's living, you know, like, and you get that too. I mean, but like nowadays you got, for a modern example, Bryan Danielson in AEW is the current champion. He's in his 40s something now. He had a 15-year career before he came to WWE and got really huge. There's people who do it like 20, 30 years who still do it. Sting just retired earlier this year.
What?
Sting's final match was earlier this year.
That's unhinged.
Yeah, he was doing table spots and shit at his age, like going through tables and shit. And his last match was a hardcore match. It was fucking awesome. so like, it really depends. It depends on how well you protect yourself. It depends on what vices they get into to do that. You know, I mean, Lex Luger is still alive, but he's in a wheelchair and lost all of his body mass. And like, because he did so many fucking drugs that like it just fucked him up. Dynamite Kid, absolute piece of shit. I think he finally died. If not, he's not doing well because he would do a flying headbutt. And after a while, he just compressed his fucking spine. And he couldn't walk anymore.
That doesn't sound good.
But he just threw drugs on it. And, you know, like it kind of clicks and whatever. You just got to get to the next town. You know, like William Regal wrestled a 20-year career after breaking his neck in 1993 and not realizing it. He broke his neck finishing a match, winning the match with a German suplex with a bridge where you got the guy's belly to your back and you're like doing the Heimlich, but you thump them on their head. He did that, but he did the bridge and he landed on his own head and he didn't realize it till 20 years later, but he broke his neck. And it just,
how was he just that high? How does that?
Well, it fucked him up. You watch the match and after he wins, he kind of has trouble standing up and he just thought he got his bell rung, which is what they call a concussion. I'm sure he had that too, but what he didn't realize is that his neck was hanging on by a thread. And it eventually, because he just kept throwing pain meds at it, because they got to keep working. And he was in good enough shape and thick enough muscles that it never fully broke. And it ended up callusing into like a ball that was holding his neck together. And he wrestled until 2013 was his final in-ring match. And he still works as like a coach now. It's wild. The human body is fucking amazing. Because some people, you know, die in a couple years from this, and some people are William Regal who wrestled with a broken neck and didn't even realize it.
That is like the saddest, hardest core thing I've ever heard.
Right? No, and he's an amazing dude. He eventually kicked everything, like because he realized, and he just lived with it. But like he didn't sleep right for 20 years because every time he'd fall asleep, his neck would disconnect and it would wake him up. Like that's a horrible life. It's insane, right? But he eventually realized he went to a doctor and they're like, I'm diagnosing you with your shit's fucked up. Like, look, what the fuck?
You know, like, your head's not on.
Your head ain't on.
Imagine how crazy it is to wait 20 years to go to a doctor, and then when you go to the doctor sends you to the emergency room. for something that happened. Like, yeah, oh, the injury happened 20 years ago, and it's so bad we've sent you to OR1 immediately.
You have consistently desperately needed to go to the hospital for 20 years.
He just didn't, because he had money to make and a life to live, and he just powered through because they're literally those kind of tough guys. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, it's whatever, it's pain. I'm a wrestler. I'm always in pain. Of course I am. I get the shit beat out of me for a living. You know, and he was, and Willie Regal's a shooter. Like, he's a legit, I mean, he's one of the guys that's like, I wouldn't want to fuck with him even to this day. I just would not want to fuck with that guy. He will fuck you up. He's also just one of my all-time favorites. He's one of the best villains ever. But he eventually got clean and just lived his life. And then later in life realized that that was an issue. He got that fixed. And then he found out that his heart was fucked up. Was basically encased in a callus of fat and shit. That he's still alive and teaching people, and meanwhile so many of the greats are gone. You know, it's really a horse's piece. You know, so I would say on average though, like, if you're not a superstar where you're gonna get paid to do it forever, I'd say most people have like a good 10-year run in various feds at this time. I mean, nowadays, like, you can keep working on the indies forever if you can sell yourself right. It's like being a band, you know. Like, it's the same sort of thing. There's indie shows everywhere, so you get yourself booked. But if you take care of yourself, you can do it for decades. If you get hurt, sometimes you gotta, I mean, Daniel Bryan had to retire, Bryan Danielson, sorry, he had two names. Bryan Danielson was forced to retire like twice because of neck surgery. He broke his shit, but he was able to come back to the point where he's like, I feel good enough to get back in the ring and do this, and I miss it so much that I want to risk it. And he's probably going to retire at some point this year. Like, he basically said that whoever beats him for the belt, that's his last match. And that's pretty fucking cool that he's able to do that. He's the GOAT. Like, he literally looks like a GOAT. It's wonderful.
The tagline, the tagline for the Hesse Julia World Tour is, quote, selling ourselves for years across the states, unquote.
Yeah,
that's what we're going to be doing after this podcast. After I take control of this podcast and sell it to a wealthy benefactor.
Oh God, yeah, no, that'd be cool. I'm fine with that. Give me some wealth. But yeah, so like, that's to answer that question. a bit of a tangent, but I encourage questions. Okay,
so Mr. Wonderful's dead.
So Mr. Wonderful's dead.
Everyone else gets maybe 10 years.
Do we give a shit about this free-for-all at the end? It was very difficult to make out who's even fighting who at many points. There's like 8 people.
We skipped clean over match number 3.
I don't.
This one, fucking ruled.
He's swinging his wood and calling everyone hoes.
First of all, I love this little greaseball, Jimmy Hart.
Jimmy Hart is a classic greaseball, still alive, kicking and greaseballing, and still looks exactly like that. Just
holy shit! Yeah, I did miss an entire fight because my notes are dominated by just the quotes. You wouldn't want to shake hands with an Irish is one of the standout bits.
Oh, I did grab a quote where he just said, oh, those Irish jeans are kicking it.
They hate him.
Oh, yeah, because Jim Duggan is Irish. They hate him for being Irish, but he's calling everyone hoes for America. Hacksaw is like if a Pokemon was named Ho. He's calling out every punch thrown. Ho! And that's his whole bit. That's Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
They don't make beefcake like that anymore.
Oh my God, he's another one who kept going forever and would actually fuck you up. He got fired from the WWF for getting high with the Iron Sheik and getting pulled over in the same car when they're supposed to hate each other. So a little ref distraction, quick end with the torture rack, and just like that, Duggan's off to get high and hit a Denny's. And like, fuck yeah, like, do it. Consummate professional. So yeah, that's a quick one. So I can see why you would have skipped over it, Julio's.
Yeah, it lasted a second, and all I really noted was how funny the anti-Irish sentiment was from the announcer. Maybe it just got clouded over by the fact that the end of this episode was basically it's a mad world where it starts out with about four wrestlers and it ends with about 732 people out on the field.
Yeah, the implications of what was happening like rapidly got less and less clear.
That's Nitro, baby. Like that's going to be like a thing for a while. Like they've yet to really master it, but like the clusterfuck at the end of the show is such a fucking thing from this era. And there's a reason for it. It's because like everyone involved in this match has clout, basically, to put it in poster terms that we might understand. They all have clout. They all don't want to cede clout. So how do we do this while maintaining everyone's clout? You make it a clusterfuck. So like everyone can be, well, I was distracted, so it doesn't. All these motherfuckers know this is fake, but it still matters to them, especially Hulk. Always Hulk. He's always worried about someone taking his spot.
Like, so the chaos is a way of saving face. Like it doesn't really we all go down in the haze, you know, fog of war, and nobody lost.
Basically. And while doing that, we can get everyone hype for the next week. This was a particularly ham-fisted version of this. And other than that, it's a pretty I was surprised at how surprisingly good of a match it was. Like just because, not because these guys suck. I mean, Hogan's Hogan, but the fact that they gave him so much time, and like it was good tag team wrestling. Like they did all the shit. Everyone got their shit in. I did take a note of a 7-year-old girl just rocking out to Sting's theme song next to a bunch of dudes with Sting written on their bellies.
There was a surprising amount of like young children.
Oh, this was back when this shit was supposed to still be for like kids. Which is also a lot of why Raw is the way it is, because they seem to think that that's for children. But it's also the way it is because Vince is a predator and doesn't understand what actually is for children. But ostensibly, he's trying to sell that shit to kids, because this is supposed to be family shit. Where we are getting much into the era where they go, sex sells and we want people to bleed. It's a whatever match. Y'all are lucky. Hogan has his mustache fully grown back, which
I hate it, but it's also like I was like, oh yeah, that's what he looks like. That's it. That's the look.
That's Hulk Hogan. It could have been worse. We've been going on like 6 weeks of his naked upper lip.
I'd scream. Fucked up. All I have noted about the outcome of this match, really, I think. There was a lot of obviously stuff where I was like, that seems really impressive that they did that, and that's cool. But all I really noted was that they basically made Sting undergo the hero's journey in 8 minutes. Like, they just...
wrote Sting is an impact
Sting
sub.
Is just getting, we're going to make him cross the threshold, and we're going to beat his ass for 5 minutes straight. 50 people are going to punch him. He's gonna rise above it all, and he's gonna
he was getting shit kicked in
the ring to Mordor.
Yeah,
and at the end of the day, Sting's there, and they're talking about fighting the Japanese, and Hulk Hogan's like, "Sting, are you gonna guard my back?" And Macho Man's like, "Are you gonna be working together?" And Sting's like, "Oh boy, I do love fighting."
This was weird. Oh, hold on. Before we get to how weird the end was, can we address how hard Ric Flair was serving in that purple sequin gown
with
the sleeves?
Oh, yeah. Styling and profile. Yeah, like, that's his whole shtick. Yeah, it's like, he's so pretty. I will say that Sting absolutely, not only Hero's Journey, but also Impact Sub and a fucking brat. Because he's like no selling all of Rick's chops, and Rick chops hard. Like, that's one of his things. So like, he's no selling all of it and just being like, nah fuck you, and then he got hit me harder. So that both of you are on point, and it's fantastic. You called it out, Julia. That was the story they were telling, basically, is make Sting suffer for being Lex's friend, because he insists on being Lex's friend, and thus he must suffer because Lex is being a no good poopy pants, and like thus he must suffer. That's it.
Very much kind of so. Jesus Christ of wrestling, as but, many people have said. Essa, back me up on this.
Not for the last time.
But then, so
not
like
for the first the last time, yeah.
So we get all the chaos, and then like I didn't even really notice when we transitioned into this, but all of a sudden it's like Sting, Macho, and Hulkster like doing polycule struggles.
Polycule.
Basically, oh no, they're having. Yeah, I wrote down the second week in the row we get three dudes having group therapy with Mean Gene in the ring down tonight. Yeah, basically after a pretty great match for the most part. I mean, there was a couple things that I thought were great. Arn Anderson sells a face plant from Sting.
Yo,
on like a reversal, it looks like he just got shot and just like died.
That looked amazing. Rough.
It was so good. And that's what I mean. All four of these guys are fucking legendary. And been at it for a while. So it was really a solid tag team match. And like the clusterfuck finish was good, even though like it was technically a clean finish. I was expecting more of it to fall apart. But like Hogan actually got the pin on him. But it's always, in this instance, it was always you're going to fall apart or Hogan gets the pin. Because Hogan is head clout monster, and it is in his contract. He literally at WCW has in his contract creative control. So like it gets worse and worse. But like anyone who pays attention week to week, like we very well are, is going to notice that he doesn't lose a lot. And he very rarely loses clean. There's always a reason. And like that shit's gonna go on for decades up into court, like in his old age. He needs to win and be right because he's Hulk Hogan, brother. Sigh. But yeah, that's Nitro. You really nailed it. Just the polycule having a talk at the end, and that's what they've been doing for weeks now.
Is that the like the climax is a bunch of men like heartfeltly sharing their feelings?
At least on Nitro lately, and you know, and then I think also trying to plant the seed for next week of someone's gonna do a betrayal. It's exposition. It's them trying to like get people sucked in for next week, and really it's just them scream talking.
I hate it when members of my polycule betray me at the next week. I hate it when my metamorph hits me over the head with a steel chair. And then blocks me on Blue Sky afterwards.
Doesn't apologize until the pay-per-view. Yeah, fuckers. So that was Nitro, folks.
Pretty epic.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, no, that was great. I had a lot of fun with Nitro, and I was looking forward to Raw until I watched Raw.
Honestly, Nitro had so many fun bits that stood out, and bits we didn't even like get to, and... I'd had so many like quotable moments from the announcers and the people there. It was kind of crazy. And then we got to the Raw and I was like, yeah, this is good. But it didn't.
That's better than I would have given it. I was watching it and I was just like,
oh,
Vince
yeah.
McMahon should be hammered. Killed. This hammered. Is terrible.
Yeah. Oh, he,
not even for what he hammers. Did after, just for how fucking bad this was.
All of this. He needs to get off the fucking commentary table. He is the worst. He is the fucking worst. On top of being the devil. Yes. Hessa, you're again, correct. Correct read from the newbie. Vince sucks at this shit. Especially going from listening to one of the best to do it, Bobby Heenan, ever, to these two chuckle fucks. Yeah, but it starts with the vignette again, because that's their whole thing, and ER comes to Raw to remind you again that it's 1995. No George Clooney, but Bob Backlund with the COVID-19 of the 90s, the cross-faced chicken wing.
ER crossing over with wrestling is so funny. Because I would love to imagine that it carries over to this day, and you have like crossovers between Grey's Anatomy and like modern wrestling.
God, I
like
fucking
Mick,
wish.
Like Mick Dramey shows up and announces for an episode.
That would be awesome. I don't think that's ever happened, but I also want to reiterate, ER probably had no idea that they did that. That's just like Vince just going, what's topical? For the love of God, normies, watch my show. He just wants to be legitimate so bad.
That's just
them trying to be clever. That was not an actual tie-in with ER. In fact, I hope he got sued, but he probably didn't. We get threatened with a Shawn Michaels interview. Yay. But again, much like Nitro, we start off with folks in the ring, and like that very rarely happens, and it happened for both shows this week, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that rules for
not us. Usually. Yeah, it rules for you, and no one else rules for you. This fucking match, because we have Owen Hart, one of the best to ever do it, versus a jobber who's like a little nobody. But this little nobody is a baby Jeff Hardy who goes on to be a Hall of Famer. So this was actually awesome, in my opinion. I thought this was a great match. And I want Jeff's pants. But it was wild to see a baby Jeff Hardy, because like a couple of years from now, he's going to be like one of my favorite wrestlers when I was a kid. But right now, he's a jobber against Owen Hart.
He's taking nasty suplexes.
So nasty in that he gets some offense in, which is great. But then Owen hits him with that one clothesline and he goes head over feet on the cell and just does like the full like fucking backflip basically.
And then I just wrote, oh no, the bonsai.
Yeah.
Cripes. Owen wins with the roll up, and then here comes Yokozuna to murder baby Jeff Hardy with his butt, is what I wrote down, because why not? And I also love that Diesel comes to save him after he has been rendered entirely three-dimensional.
This is what cemented in the I think WWE Raw wins on the kink meter between the two episodes already. This is the sickest, most deranged fetish shit I've seen in my life. It's just a crowd full of people just cheering as this very large man gets up on the top ropes and threatens to kill a man by sitting on him with his big ass. And everyone loves it.
Yeah, basically, everyone loved it. Cheers all around. No, there's a lot of face sitting going on this episode.
It's an unreal. Like if you took someone who doesn't speak English and showed them just the video, and they're not jacked into the popular culture, they would be confused. They would think you're showing them a sex tape. It's so homoerotic so straight. A crowd cheering for all of this is insane to me.
So imagine how I felt loving this shit as an
swept up in the main. It's just one of those things where I'm just imagining that a quarter of the audience there, the impressionable youth, were like a seed
activated
that yeah, would yeah, not be a... fully grown in their head until they see like a very specific post on Blue Sky 20 years later, and they're like, oh fuck, yeah. Oh no.
I hope this doesn't wake anything.
Oh no! Why didn't I start taking estrogen after that wrestling match?
It would have saved so much time. God, speaking of estrogen, would have saved her. Shawn Michaels. I have to note
that's dirty.
That's super dirty. His makeup looks great. Okay, I'm just saying. But Sean fucking is his pirate shirt. This is gimmick infringement for the folks who've been playing along, because Lex Luger on the first episode of Nitro shows up at the Mall of America. No one knew he was going to be there because he was working for the Fed. He was working for WWE and like surprised everyone. But he showed up wearing that shirt. And that shirt has haunted us on this podcast ever since. And then to see Sean show up wearing it, I'm just like, that's mean. That's just mean, Sean. That is mean girl shit. That's petty. He stole the man's shirt. It's gimmick infringement.
There's only so many shirts. What the fuck?
He did. There's only so many shirts Lex Luger can wear, like physically, that will fit on him. So that's extra fucked up. But just had to throw that out there. It was an important note because, oh my God, the shirt came back. But back from break, it is once again Joshi time. We get Japanese women's wrestling.
Yeah, and this so ruled. Jazzed.
This ruled so hard.
Oh yeah, we love the ladies.
It had some problems, but it ruled.
Like, mostly on commentary, I'm sure. Yeah. One lady, Asari, looked like dressed like Captain Marvel, and I love that. I just love Japanese wrestling for that. And then Asha Kong, who's amazing and has actually shown up in a couple of places on our journey. So I love that they still have some Japanese women wrestling here. Asha Kong put on a clinic basically on how to be a monster bad guy.
Yeah.
Like that's how you do it. Intimidating the ref, no selling the crossbody where she just bounces off of her.
That was like, that was so fucking sick.
So good. Like this
is she straight up bounced right off.
Just straight up bounced off of her. She's so tiny, you know. It's like nothing.
It's like when you hit the boss with an ineffective attack and the health bar doesn't move, and you're like,
yeah, oh. And you're like, fuck.
Oh no, I forgot that I need a magic item to fight this boss. I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die in the ring. That's what it felt
yeah,
like.
I mean, there. You knew the match was over. At
yeah,
that
it's
point.
Like at this point, it's just how long does it take? And just she just does all the shit, all the like super strong shit, and then oh my god, no, a spinning package pile driver, where she like got her legs hooked up and spun around and dropped her on her head. That's not. I've never seen that before, and I watch too much wrestling. I've seen people do package pile drivers. Kevin Owens, eat your heart out. He said that like he's been doing that forever. He's been doing that for decades at this point in Ring of Honor, but he's never spun it that I've seen. And I didn't realize that the Asha Kong invented that shit probably. So once again on track, Japanese women invented modern wrestling in the 90s, and I love that for them. This is just such a banger. But I also wanted to take note real quick, though. You'd mentioned the way they talked about Japanese wrestlers on Nitro and like saying that like basically that they're a bunch of prissies and shit. This is Japanese wrestling. Like those kicks, that strong style, she's just fucking kicking her. Like
yeah, that like the like triple flip across the
oh
ring,
yeah, and all that shit. Like unreal. This is Japanese.
Like the spinning drill kick off the fucking
oh
ropes.
My god, all this shit. And like this is what Japanese wrestling is. Like they hit, like they like it looks better and looks real because they're barely pulling their punches. And that's just part of the style. It's like the warrior spirit, like that you
so that was something I took in the notes here is that the little lady there, like I was like, she's either really good at physical acting or she is getting kicked in the spine really hard.
A bit of column A, a bit of column B, and that's Japanese wrestling. It's like they know where to kick in the safe spot.
Right, talk about selling.
Right? It's actually, I've said it before, I'll say it again, very related to impact play and kink. You know where it's safe and unsafe to hit. That's why they do the chops on the chest and shit. Like there's a lot of that knowledge crosses over into professional wrestling because you know where it's safe to take those hits and take those bumps. And everybody has to like know their own body and what they can take. But that's a lot of what they do in Japan is like you build up a literal callus of just getting hit real hard and you can do it. But yeah, again, she just puts on a clinic, like she splashes her and then pulls her up on the two count so she can hit her some more. Like
she was
playing
with
her food. Exactly. That's she's did such a goddamn good job of like that's how you do that shit. Like if you want to look like a monster. And then she mercifully ends it with the hardest spinning back fist I have ever seen in my life. Oh my god, I thought she took her head off. Just Jesus Christ.
It looked like a street fight video at the end. It was just it just was insane. I thought she died. I think she
legit got a bloody nose. Like that looked like she got hard way blood, like she's legit bleeding from her face there at the end.
Yeah, by far that match sold the violence like more than anything we saw in both
yep
episodes.
And that absolutely comes down to the different styles of it. Like in Japan it's all a lot more like that, And over, it becomes more like that in America, because, you know, a lot of what we see with them working together and having these people come over, that was a big part of Japanese wrestling culture too, is you send the young lions to America. Like, you send them to come learn how we do it, so that basically so that you can work anywhere. That's the idea. It goes back to the Carney aspect of it, is you want to be a journeyman. You can want to be able to show up and be getting a ring with someone you've never met before, knowing that you have to do this together, and like all you know is who's gonna win, and then you get in there and it's all improv, basically. Like, that's how it was done for decades. Nowadays, people will like choreograph out their matches and like know every spot that they're gonna do, but that's not how it was. And even up to back what we're watching, it's not always like that. They're literally going in there and whispering what is going to happen next to each other. Like, that's how it's done. It's all improv. It's kind of fucking wild. So like, that's why you do that. You go to different countries so that you can learn to do that kind of improv with someone that you don't speak the same language with. It's really wild. It's art.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And like, there were a lot... There were, like, you can tell in terms of skill, like, who can do that
basically,
and who can't.
A good example of that, I think, coming up is, we'll get to it, the Ahmed Johnson squash match. It is a good example of that, because, like, oh, I guess we'll just get to it. Ahmed is new here. He's very green. We now know in hindsight that, like, he never got all that much better according to the people he's working with. Like, he was known for hurting people, basically.
It looked
Well, the problem is up until now, he's been working with a lot of really good workers, so they made all of his shit look really good and like it should be. This guy was a jobber who I looked into. What's his name? Rick. We got here. Rick Stockhauser. Looks like a discount Arn Anderson. I looked at
Stockhauser.
Yeah, he's Stock Anderson is what he was. He's like the stock photo. I looked him up and he didn't do much. And I'm guessing because he sucked. And that's, you could tell the difference. It looked like shit because he also didn't know what he was doing. And like, I think that was kind of awesome to point out for folks who have been watching along. This is what happens when you put Ahmed Johnson against someone who isn't better than him and can't make him look good. It looks like this. It just looks like he's hurting him, because he is.
I mean, it did look athletic, right? Like, these are big dudes and they are tossing each other
around. But it doesn't
around.
Look smooth. It doesn't look safe. Like
it was, no. Look safe. It was short, and it just kind of like, okay. Cool. You definitely seemed like you hurt that guy, but it wasn't.
Yeah, they kind of just did flips back and forth for like 2
yeah,
minutes.
It wasn't like a fun back and forth or anything. It's the type of match where I would be like, oh, well, that wasn't my money's worth. I'm glad there are other matches around it, which will hopefully be better. The foreshadowing.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because that's certainly fucking sucked. But the crowd's behind him. He dealt with Jerry Lawler being a chuckle fuck, and he did pretty good. So like, he's green. This is his first run here, but you know, we'll see where it goes. That was definitely the worst match he's had so far. I think it was rough. But it wouldn't be Raw without some QVC time. Doc's trying to sell us the jean jackets that feel more 90s than almost anything else I've seen.
I want.
I kind of do too, but I want
them right now.
I was gonna say, if you cut the sleeves off, I'm actually kind of into it.
Yeah, you cut the sleeves off, like, that's immensely T-girl swag. 90s denim jacket with the sleeves cut off and Bret Hart on the
back. So happy I wasn't the only one who thought that. I was like, actually, some of this are kind of a look.
The weird sales pitches in the episode between the fights brings me to a point I do want to bring up. Is it normal for the difference between the Nitro show and the Raw show, that the Raw show has significantly less wrestling, it feels like? Yep. Like it feels like there is such a high amount of interviewing and ads that go on for a long time built into the show itself for WWE that I would be like, it's less value. It's like, I think literally it is like one less fight maybe on paper, but it feels like it feels like there's basically two wrestling matches in this episode, actually.
It's goddamn near, yeah. I mean,
it felt like they were doing world building, right? Instead of war.
It's all lore shit. No, and that is on brand for this era, especially. It's not great. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, this is like the worst year, and especially for W. This is the worst year. Like WWE's that Shawn Michaels, basically.
That Shawn Michaels interview like slaughtered the pacing.
Yep, we're doing flashbacks. What? Like, why are we doing flashbacks in the show?
It's all exposition shit. And like WCW does exposition through promos, which is like how it was done for decades. You got the guys who, because you have to remember, if when they weren't on TV, they're doing house shows. They're going like town to town and it's not getting broadcast, but they're still coming out and doing these shows for people. But you can't assume everyone's seen the TV, so you got the guys come out to cut a promo and basically yell talk about what happened previously on. You know, and WCW is like more like that, where Vince wants to make it entertainment. He hates, that's the thing, Vince McMahon hates wrestling. like Vince McMahon hates wrestling, he wants to make movies. So that's like what he has been trying to do ever since his dad died and he took over, is to try to make it more legitimate and more like entertainment and less like its origins, which is fake sports. So that,
which is weird because like Nitro was less of that and felt more legitimate.
Yep, that's on purpose. Nitro started as the WCW is the current, at this point, iteration of what was the National Wrestling Alliance, the NWA, which is like the old governing body of wrestling. So like WCW really is the old school, whereas WWE used to be the WWWF, which was a part of the NWA but broke off in like the 60s. So like they became their own thing and they were the New York promotion. They were that was their territory. So that's why they call WWE is referred to as New York, even though they're out of Connecticut now. but like that was the territory back in the territory days. All the territories worked together under the NWA, like a union for the promoters, not the workers. Can't stress that enough. The workers didn't get a union, but the promoters, the bosses had a union. And that's,
and we could thank the Hulkster.
Oh, God, yeah, we could thank the Hulkster for the workers not having a union, McMahon. Had to go make the movie Predator to get my union. so, like, good for Jesse. He did it. Jesse, my Governor Ventura. Fuck yeah. I say what you will about the guy. He brought Warren Zevon to sing Werewolves of Minnesota when he became governor.
Okay, that's fuck. Like, there's a lot to be said about the man, for sure.
There's a lot to be said about the man. Also, if you ever get a chance, look up his gubernatorial portrait, like the painting that they did of him. It's unfucking real. Unfucking real. But it's very much real and hung up in our capital.
You go
right on ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you're crazy if you think I haven't seen the Jesse Ventura governor portrait already.
But for Hesse, like, yes, it's worth looking up that like that was his official portrait that hung up. That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
Just dudes, yes, Jesse Ventura
dude's fucking
is the
rock.
Ultimate dude's rock. But yeah, to get back to how awful Raw is, instead of wrestling, we get QVC, we get what feels like an anti-smoking ad, but it's actually a Happy Holidays, which was just disturbing.
It was weird.
Like a To Catch a Predator kind of way. It felt like it was very fucking weird.
Well, it was another hyper-real moment.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Razor Ramon, like, razor's edged a guy who was selling cigarettes to a kid, so I guess that's a net benefit.
Oh.
I don't know.
But he was probably downgrade. That kid would have looked cooler smoking cigs.
Yeah, yeah. We would all have got him trying to quit.
Plus, like, you got to get the smoking out of your system.
That's true. Or else you start heavy with HRT later in life.
I'm trying to think of all the cigarettes that I want to smoke. I'm trying not to think of them.
Every day that passes by is a cigarette unsmoked. That's the official tagline of this podcast.
I'm trying to quit.
I'm sorry. This podcast is now brought to you by sunflower seeds. Do you still is that still the way to quit smoking?
I don't know. I haven't tried in years.
The only two ways I know how to quit smoking is sunflower seeds works in cartoons, and then many people say they take up vaping afterwards, and then they get even more addicted to vaping.
Well, yeah, because it's
still nicotine. I got very addicted to vaping and then got off with the phone.
And you do, and then you go to Zins, I think, after that.
Well, no. The trick is you chew a piece of the gum and then immediately smoke a cigarette. And you will feel so fucking bad that you will immediately click the switch in your brain. It's like, it's the chemical. It's not the cigarette. The cigarette will make me feel bad.
I think I did manage to quit for a couple weeks once that way when I accidentally got too strong of the patches and like didn't realize I'd gotten like way too many milligrams and I just started sweating. And I was like, what is going on? It's like, well, you smoke about a pack a day, Garrick, and you just put a two packer on your arm.
It's so, really sad that
I would throw.
I did.
I'm sorry.
At least I didn't try to roll it up and smoke it. You know,
it's so tragic that shock therapy doesn't work on trans femmes to stop them from doing bad habits. Think of all of...
Have we tried?
No. The more you turn it up, the more they want to do it. It doesn't work. It's
terrible.
You think you're doing negative reinforcement, but you're actually doing positive reinforcement. You need to... I don't know. Yeah, you
switch to weed.
Switch to a different drug of choice. Do a roulette wheel of different chemicals and use the...
See which
use
one
the
works.
Ones that
right. Put the cigarettes down, pick up the sheet of 2CI.
Yeah, God, I'm just trying to get down to a little bit of
a
cannabis.
A gallon of PCP.
Maybe some coffee. Sure, on the weekends, you know.
We're talking about a lot of different things because I think none of us want to keep talking about the final match. Or are we at the final match now? Or are we at the second final?
We're almost there. We also get a vignette for Raw Bowl with Freddie fucking Blassie, which is pretty great. But more just talking in the ring, and I hate it. So to your point, it's mostly they talk too much. It's just so much exposition. I did like that Sid says him and Ted and the kid are like a family, and Vince looks disgusted by the concept of family. Basically,
yeah, really
I was
good.
Like that tracked.
It got kind of meta there.
Yeah,
like when they were like yelling at Vince about like being manipulative, but it's within the story, but also he was doing that.
Yeah, but also he's the booker. So yes, absolutely.
Hey, wouldn't it be funny if you get in the ring, called me a piece of
Isn't
shit?
Isn't that his thing though? He's always the bad guy.
He does that. Yeah, that became his thing. That whole shtick hadn't been born yet. This is pre Mr. McMahon times, but he ended up leaning into it and was like, all right, well, I'm just gonna be a piece of shit on purpose as a character, and then no one will suspect that I just am that way. But there we have the reoccurring little bit on here of there were signs, because like once you realize that he's basically the showrunner of Raw and like all of this is passing through and out of his brain, you realize like, no, he's always been this terrible. Like he's just always been a piece of shit. He's like, I'm faking. It's a joke. It's kayfabe. And it's like, no, dude, you're just a piece of shit. So we have that to look forward to, which is nice. In the meantime, he calls Backlund a lunatic and I take offense because some of my best friends are lunatics. And they never managed to run for public office, which Backlund did. So, like,
that's why I haven't run for public office.
Yeah, thank you.
This is my time that I'm announcing that I'm running for public office.
Yeah. Oh my God, Uncut Femmes 2028.
Please, Write in your ballot.
That actually does align with my political beliefs.
Please vote for me. Do not do your write-in for Katie type pussy. This is your PSA. If I see anyone doing that joke again, I'll know that you didn't listen to the podcast and you didn't do this and vote for me.
You didn't do your homework.
And I'll know you picked Katie over me, and I'll be sad.
Did we just start a political turf war with you and Katie?
Yeah, I'm in a perpetual kind of war. The War of the Roses with Katie. It's really difficult to discern when it started. It's never going to end, or arguably it's already ended, and it's very illusory who is actually on any given side at any time. Anyway, detracting from
that's kayfabe. That's the blue
that's
sky.
The blue sky
yeah, that's the joy of
the blue sky corner, which we're introducing to the podcast, which now that we're taking over is going to take up.
Julia's podcast now.
Folks, this has always been a blue sky
there
podcast.
Yeah, it's always.
We had an episode in Portuguese, for fuck's sake. Well, episode title, at least. In Portuguese when Brazil took over.
All the Portuguese listeners just locked the fuck in when I said Katie tight pussy. I'm going to have death threats in my DMs. They're going to be like, how dare you aim for her like this? What? Portugal loves Katie. If there's one thing Katie loves, it's Portugal.
More than Lula. Like, Brazil loves Katie tight pussy.
No, Katie hates Brazil, but Portugal.
Portugal, though, that's entirely different.
Half of them, meanwhile, are like, "Wait, I thought you just said tight."
Wait a second. You have.
Hang on. Who's Katie?
Who's Katie? You have me.
How big is it?
But yes, sure enough, we are on the last match. We did get all the way to this main event. The champ, the Canadian hero, Brett the Hitman Hart, coming out to the Canadian national anthem. I will say, both these two are like legit fantastic, and like, this match is kind of the polar opposite of what we saw a lot of this week. This is like amateur mat wrestling. This is what wrestling used to look like.
Kind of a wet fart match.
Yeah, this looked like high school wrestling.
A lot of it, but like, this is old school pro wrestling, like right until back when humps Brett's head for a bit for the camera. I don't know how much they used to do that, but like, a lot of this is.
I wrote intricate rituals again.
Yeah, it's the intricate rituals to be able to hump Brett's head, like. But that
he went tongue out puppy girl with it. It was really
it was
something.
Graphic. It was graphic. He's running for public office. I'm sure.
I'm surprised it was allowed on TV in the 90s, and I'm not really kidding.
Oh God, it's gonna get so much worse. You haven't even seen a Gold Dust yet. Who is the main subject of our episode titled "Vince? What if I did estrogen for the gimmick?"
that's a good bit.
That's pretty solid.
Only half kidding. Yeah, no, he came.
I've
to
never
Vince.
Never committed harder to a bit in my life.
He came to Vince once and was like, "What if I got breast implants?" And Vince had to talk him out of it. And I was like, "But legit, like, honey, do you want to talk? Like you're thinking." You're thinking about this really hard, Dustin. Like, most wrestlers don't think about that hard. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but imagine getting to write it off as a business.
Oh my
expense.
God, I'm going to throw up. I need it. I need it so bad. I need to put it to be tax deductible now.
We can find a way. So you got to learn how to amateur wrestle like this, and then maybe you'll have a better chance.
Yeah, this match.
God.
This match really reminded me of, again, rule of threes. Julia mentioned her only frame of reference, which is MMA again. Of the worst MMA matches, the ones where it's two grapplers, and those are the those are the matches that everyone fucking hates because they go on forever, and it's just very like intimate grappling, and like we're just hugging each other and moving around
a lot of hugging
and.
Competitive.
Yeah,
hugging.
this felt worse than that because it just kept going on, and I was like, I don't think anyone's making any progress. I don't know who's.
And then they were like basically edging, with the win.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's absolutely that. We call that storytelling.
I call it courtship. That was
sexy. It was so hot.
Sorry, we're talking about edging, right? I tuned out the rest of what Essa said.
Yeah, he said edging, and I just went to the Dungeon of Goon, and I never came back. But no, that's very much what it shit used to be like. Like, way back in the day, it was a lot of that kind of stuff, and less punching and kicking. He still had it. But, so, kind of a clinic. They continue with the clinics. I did have to take note of Vince referring to Backlund as the Lunatic Fringe.
Yes.
He pulls that shit out decades later for Dean Ambrose. John Moxley, when he was in WWE, went by Dean Ambrose. And they called him the Lunatic Fringe. So, like, Vince holds on to these phrases and shit for decades, apparently. Which
one is very like him and Trump, but you know, like, they kept bringing up Backlund's politics, like, a lot, but not, what was that about?
He's literally running for office in Kentucky at the, or Connecticut, I think, or at this point. I forget if it's okay. Connecticut. No, he was legit, like, running for some sort of seat, but I think in kayfabe they said he was running for president. He might have actually been. But he legit, like, ran for office at some point. That's just it. Backlund's only kind of sort of not actually like that. I don't. It's hard to tell because he's of the old school where he'll keep kayfabe. So, like, whenever someone recognizes him, he switches the flip and he flips the switch and he turns into this guy. Because he's, like, the old school. Like, if someone recognizes you as your character, you are that character even in the wild. So it makes it really hard for people who, like, live in the small town in, like, Vermont where he lives with him to, like, know if he's actually that crazy or not. Because that's just Bob. Like, that's just Mr. Backlund. Like, that's just how he is. Which is fucking wild. But this match is nuts. They go back and forth hurting each other, like, wearing each other's arms down, like...
There was a pile driver that looked really sick.
Oh, yeah. Well, after the final commercial break, too, we get to the point where Brett is, he's officially in his get my shit in mode. He's got his five move, like, so he hits the Russian leg sweep, and he, like, gets all set up for the sharpshooter, he drops the elbow, he gets everything in its right place, but then Bulldog comes out to make sure no one has to lose to the other one, because again, it's that,
yeah,
it's that pop game.
British Bulldog is here for no reason now.
Oh, he very much has a reason to sell pay-per-views, because he's going to fight Bret Hart and to make sure that Backlund doesn't have to lose clean to Bret and thus hurting his feelings, basically. It's literally, they're just, I wish I was making up that part. But back in this day especially, that was real. These guys didn't want to lose on TV because they thought that the fake fight would make them look bad. You know what I mean?
And so, like, that's like why all of these seem to end with, like, somebody's nemesis sprinting out from the lockers and, like, diving under the bottom rope.
Yeah, because it's partly trying to continue the pushing the ongoing storyline and make you pay attention next week. And also to, like, save face in a lot of cases, so that they didn't have to look bad on TV, and so that your baby faces look like superheroes, basically. Like, it's to protect the clout, basically, and protect the character, protect the gimmick, is, I guess, what they would call it, in a lot of ways. Is it, like, that's why Hulk doesn't lose clean very rarely, because he's supposed to be literally immortal, like, and unbeatable and, like, all this shit since, like, 84, you know? So, like, yeah, like, it's just literally like that. And yeah, it goes that way. They go with the DQ. Backlund gets the chicken wing Brett twice and, like, hold it
cross face, like, chicken wing sounds like a weed strain.
It does. Cross faded chicken wing, maybe. Oh, now I want that. I want that. Now I just want weed and chicken wings at the same time. Crossface chicken wing. Yeah, I've always thought it was the wildest name for a move, but it's literally just, like, the two things that he's doing. It's like
is a crossface. It's a chicken wing across the face. It is pretty much dead ass.
He just drags a chicken wing across your face and you choke on the grease. Well, no, it's the chicken
wing. Podcast getting too sensual too quick.
Right. The chicken wing is how he's getting the arm trapped, and then the cross face is him pulling his face in the opposite direction. It's an actual, like, legit thing that, like, if you do it right, hurts like a motherfucker. But also like,
yes, I had a little brother, I'm aware.
Yeah.
I'm aware of torture that can only be inflicted by a sibling.
But see, I had a sibling and we watched wrestling, so we had to know. So I know for a fact that a sharpshooter hurts worse than a figure four. From experience. Oh God, I'm sure that has nothing to do with why I walk funny, but that's Raw. Fucking hell, that was that. We did it. We got all the way through both shows.
How we got feeling? All the way through,
and that one ended. It ended like really.
It really did. They really just out. It was a weird one. I feel like they haven't all been like this, but we're definitely moving into that liminal space where everyone's just trying to figure out how to keep the fucking thing alive and how to outdo the other, because that's the whole point of this. Is these both these shows ran congruently on Monday nights on different networks at roughly the same time, and they're trying to outdo each other. Still at this point, believe it or not, Raw is winning the ratings right now.
That's insane.
That's unbelievable.
On the point of the abrupt ending, I have been in theater in the like tech booth and behind the scenes. I know exactly what this was. This was a classic. The guys in the booth are screaming, "We're running out of time. We're running out of time. Please, please." Well, and no one's wrapping it up. And so, you know, just out of frame, there's 50 people screaming into microphones and headsets, just saying, "Please, please."
Well, it's also just
right. The FCC.
Out of time.
Well, that's the thing, though, is at this point, Raw wasn't live.
Nitro, really?
Yeah, Raw was taped. They would do one live. They would do one live Raw a month, and then tape the rest of them for the month the same Crazy. Night. Yeah,
I take it back. It just feels rushed. Then it just it doesn't even have a reason to feel that.
Yeah,
rushed.
No, it just sucks. It just sucks. Yeah, it's that bad. Nitro is live, and that's why Eric's always hitting those shots of saying this is the only place where you're going to get live wrestling on Monday. And all that is because he's taking shots at them because he, you know, we're going to get to the point where he starts giving away the ending to their matches on yeah, that's Ooh. Dirty. That's dirty pool.
That rules.
Yeah. Right. It gets ugly, kids. Like, this is the beginning. We're only 15 episodes in. This takes like 5 years. WCW goes on until the beginning of 2001 before Vince finally buys it. So like that's how long this show theoretically is gonna go, because they did this shit every fucking week. Yeah.
Well, then you gotta pivot to Japanese.
Oh
wrestling.
God, it's gonna be. It's, oh God, it's on the Patreon too.
Okay. You get a Kawhi logo.
I don't know. I think mine's pretty cute already. I don't know about y'all, but does anyone have a favorite match of the week?
Or pick a favorite match, or which of the two is better?
Favorite match, I'm gonna start with.
My favorite is like I'm. It's a tie for me between the very first one with Eddie Guerrero or the Aja Kong match.
Too, and I went with Aja Kong because holy fuck, that was just brilliant, and I like when ladies bleed on TV.
Yeah, weirdly, I think it's the lady. I think it's the ladies bleeding on TV for me, which is very weird because I think on average I disliked every bit of the Raw episode compared to the Nitro episode, but it had the highest high. So
yeah,
if you took out the women's match, I would just be absolutely just dumping on the Raw.
It would have been like
it would have been really like it didn't feel that great. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm not locked into the storylines and the arcs.
Oh no,
like...
I love this. This is why I ask everybody this to get the data sample. So you're saying that you think Nitro won this week?
I had to pick the two episodes, yeah, Nitro consistently. It had the lower highs, but it had the higher averages. Like, I feel like the moves I saw were just visually cooler to me.
If I was flipping channels in the 90s and like I watched an episode of Nitro, like this episode of Nitro, I'd be like, all right, I guess I'll see what's on it next week. Like, I'll check this out again. But like, if I sat through that episode of Raw, I'd be like, I'm never watching.
I wanted to see the giant. Forever. Yeah, I heard all of the hype and the polycule talk at the end,
yeah.
And the nitro hype, and they actually did a pretty good. I also like the announcers better, and they did a good job of.
And they had the tiny dog in the leather jacket.
Yes, Pepe Points wins.
Yeah, so it was really sold from minute one.
I get that. And what's wild is like that's going to keep happening in the timeline too, because eventually they overtake them for 86 weeks or 83 weeks. They beat them 83 weeks in a row where they beat them in the ratings, but that's a couple of years off, I think. You have to remember Raw has like a 2.5 year head start as far as being an established show. And that's a lot of why, because like until Nitro came, there was just Raw as far as a national, like full country show. WCW had a show, but it was regional. It was out of Georgia. So like Turner picked it up, and that's when it became like full country, because it was on TBS. And then they decided to do Nitro. Nitro started basically as a to go head to head with Vince. He came to Eric Bischoff and he's like, how do I make wrestling on TV worth it? And he's like, give me an hour on Monday night to go head to head against Vince. And that's what started all of this. So like Nitro exists specifically to try to piss on Vince's parade, basically. that's why it's the Monday Night War. In the end, he wins. In the end, Vince wins. But in the meantime, it's that thing where direct competition leads to 5 years of some of the best wrestling in the history of everything. Like it literally, but also leads to all those deaths we talked about, because it's that they're both of them are pushing each other to go harder and better and do more, and like, because they're trying to beat each other in this war that they created. And there's a lot of casualties, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's a labor story, right?
Yeah,
these are huge businesses that churn through workers like other high, you know, physicality industry.
Abso-fucking-lutely. This is absolutely a worker story podcast. Like, I will never not stress how fucking terrible just the business as a whole is bad. Someone came to me recently to see if, like, run past me the idea of working with like a Christian wrestling promotion, and I was like, honestly, I have more ethical issues with the wrestling promotion aspect than the Christian aspect. The church aspect is not as bad.
I will advertise for Christ before I advertise for wrestling.
Right,
not my good Christian wrestling server.
God, it's better now. Like, we don't really do headshots with chairs anymore, and when you do, like recently was done, it's with a gimmicked chairs. Like, I didn't learn that until later. I always thought that the chairs were like free broken or something. No, they're just hitting each other with steel chairs. There's nothing fake about that. They're just doing it. The trick is no one knew what CTE was. That's the trick. That's the magic trick, is they didn't know what a concussion was.
It is funny that now we know what CTE is, and all of these, we know a lot more. Not all. We don't know everything about these conditions, but we know a lot more about the myriad of health conditions you get from being hit in the head over and over again. We are in the era of, I would say, every sport, every contact sport in the world is just getting worse and worse, and people kind of hate it, but the people that love it are the players and the employees and everything, who,
and the guys slapping each other for Dana White on TV.
Oh my god. Oh, the slap fight era. Oh my god, I could talk about the slap fight era for sure.
That could be a whole nightmare.
Why? Because ratings were slipping, and the Ultimate Fighter was just falling apart because it's reality TV stopped being popular. Oh god, there's so many things.
It's just watching guys hurt themselves forever.
Yeah.
Just why? Like that, and that's why I say that I prefer my sports predetermined, because like At least in wrestling, they're actively trying to not hurt the guy that they're trying to make you believe that they're hurting. Like, that's an active part of it, is like, if you are a good wrestler, part of that is not hurting the guy. Yes. Like, that's a part of it, where the NFL is like, I'm going to lead with my head and I hope I kill you. Like, it's
in the spirit of Dude's Rock is implied the yearning for death.
I suppose that, and digging holes, if I remember from my experience of trying to be a dude.
Digging a hole at the beach is universal.
Exactly. It is a thing. They dig holes.
That's the they. When I was still rocking the she they, that was one of my bits. Is it she they? Because I cannot not dig a hole at the beach. Yeah.
when I was holding on to that they, like a fishing line being dragged out by a powerful marlin, you just know it's going to leave eventually.
I will mostly admit my they is still there just to give me a higher percentage of getting gendered correctly.
That's the Amtrak strategy.
I will always respect the they. I'm never demeaning the they. I'm just also aware that it's for many, many gals, they hang on to the they, and then they go,
this is the fucking worst. We're doing the worst discourse right now.
I know. I'm actually stepping in it so badly. I don't know.
God, fuck.
Can you talk about MMA again? Why did I say that?
On that note, outros and promos. Who wants to let everyone know where to find them now on social media for any complaints?
You can find me at you can find me at thatdoll.online. I have a photography page as well called Hessa Snappin, bluesky.social. Follow that one as well for cool photography and whatnot.
Are you literally doing Hess's fucking?
I don't know what you're talking about.
She is. She got it right too.
That's fucked up. Oh my god. All right, Noel, now you have to do Julie.
Yeah, if you want to cancel me for any of my terrible opinions, I'm at juliagiantrat.bsky.social.
I'm so sorry.
You can also yell at my best friend, Katie Typussy.
I'm so sorry to women.
Well, if you want to try to cancel me, that would involve me giving a fuck. Thank y'all for hanging out, listening, and you can find us at mnffpod.bsky.social. I actually updated the Instagram. I've been threatening for weeks. At mnffpod. And if you want, you can join the Patreon at patreon.com/mnffpod, where we do watch parties and Mystery Science Theater style pay-per-views, because they have them at least once a month. Back in the day, they're getting there, and you know, it's story. We want to do the whole story, so you have to pay for those because they're 3 hours long and they take a long time.
Yeah, you're a saint. Right? Jesus,
it's fun though. Right, but yeah, some of them I'll say this, racist promos aside, having just recently watched Starrcade 95, it's a banger. It's worth it. Like, because it really is like all Japanese like wrestling.
I would watch that. I would absolutely watch.
It's pretty sweet. We watched it last night, and it will be coming out in a couple weeks. To the Patreon.
Okay. So I will absolutely be listening to that's amazing.
It was really great. But yeah, that's that. We did a first tag team. Thank y'all for being here.
Beautiful. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. You got to think about what gimmick you want to go for your official tag team, and I can have you back.
that would be I would love that. That'd be so much fun.
Awesome.
I think I've become a heel. I unintentionally became a heel. And so
worked me.
You made
so
it one
good.
Episode with a heel before the heel turn. God damn, that is cruel and unusual. I like it. On that note, holy shit, we're all heels now. Otherwise, we will see you guys next time. Listeners, for more Raw versus Nitro on Monday Night Faye Fights. Bye.
Bye, everyone.